show you, because what I'm going to show you is going to apply to the general stable equity. So it's going to kind of match these two things. And so, the way to do it is this. So the observation you can make is that the logical zero, well, as well as being, it's a code word, so it's a plus one eigenstate of the stabilizer, it's also a plus one eigenstate of the z-bar operator. So actually, the logical zero is a stabilizer state, right? It's, again, an eigenstate of an extended stabilizer, which consists of the original stabilizer plus z-bar. This is the group generated by S and Z bar. So what we can do is we can, for instance, use Shor error correction to measure the eigenvalues of this stabilizer. Let's call this S prime, I guess. Okay? And if we have plus one eigenvalues for S prime, then we have a logical zero state. Okay? So in fact, we could just take some totally random state. And we do this. And then we get out a logical zero state.
Or a logical one state.
Well, so if we do what I said in the hidden board and actually do the correction, then we'll get back to logical zero. Yeah.
So Daniel, would any eigenstate, plus one eigenstate of that would be called?
Sorry, say again?
Would any plus one eigenstate of...
of this, yeah. Because, well, okay, so I've kind of written this for there only being one encoded qubit. Obviously, you could have more encoded qubits. But the point is, if you have a stabilizer, maximal stabilizer, so one that has n generators on n qubits, then there's only one state. That's a plus one eigenstate of all of that, right? There's zero encoded qubits. Okay? And if like me, you find this aesthetically unappealing, you can do a non-fault-tolerant encoding circuit. Followed by this short error correction. And it'll have the same result. Well, of course it will. So if a random state works, certainly a non-random state will. Okay?
And you always get a zero? None of these are probabilistic.
Well, so, okay, so again, it's assuming that you don't have too many errors in the procedure. But since there's only one state that has this plus one eigenstate here, that's the only thing you can get out if this works correctly. Of course, there could be errors in it, right? So it'll be a logical zero with some physical qubit errors. But there'll be a small number of errors. And so it'll pass the preparation, it'll satisfy these two preparation properties, right? So if there's, by error correction property one, it automatically satisfies preparation property one, right? Because error correction property 1 says that if there's R errors during error correction, the output passes an R filter, which is preparation property 1. Preparation property 2 says that it will decode to the ideal state, which, again, follows kind of trivially from this. because, well, okay, so in this case, it's a little more complicated. So it doesn't follow trivially from this, I take that back. But the point is that since there is only one possible state that can come out of that error correction, given that it has only R errors on it, it's going to be logical zero with R errors. But Kreno will decode the logical zero, because R is less than T, less than or equal to T. That probably wasn't your question.
I would more think along the lines of, you only have to do this once compared to like preparing.
Well, the point is, yes, you only have to do it once, but it's a short error correction, which already involves a number of repetitions.
Is there any advantage to doing, say, the probabilistic preparation things? Something measure if you get the wrong syndrome, then it was garbage, try again.
There's definitely advantages to that. You might have to repeat, for instance, a syndrome measurement fewer times. But this is just something that works. So again, I just want to put it up there. In general, it turns out that the 7-qubit code is much better to work with than the 5-qubit code, simply because you have so many transversal operations. And because you have these nice CSS things, that may be changing a little bit, but by and large, you're probably better off sticking with CSS codes, in which case you don't have to deal with these kind of ugly or short type constructions. So that's why I don't want to go into too much detail about optimizing. Okay. So pristine error correction. So we're going to take advantage of this fact. Like, remember, if we had this non-demolition measurement, but the error is propagated along C0. So while we're measuring logical qubit, we're also measuring the errors, something about the errors in the form. So what we're going to do, in fact, pristine error correction, is, well, we don't want to measure the logical qubit now, right? We specifically don't want to do that, because that would be an error itself, right? It would collapse the logical qubit. We just want to measure the physical errors. So, well, we have to modify that so that when we do a control dot, we're not doing it to a zero target, or logical zero target, we're doing it to a logical zero plus one. And then the control knot won't do anything to the logical state, but the errors will still propagate forward, like this. So we have the 0 plus 1 ancilla. We do a logical C0. And now we measure. OK? And so we get what we get, the output here is some random code word of C1. So why is it completely random code word of C1, not a C2 part? Well, this is a logical 0 plus a logical 1. So in the absence of errors, right? It's a logical 0 plus a logical 1. So it's a superposition of both cosets of C2 part. And I could say in the case where you have more encoded qubits, then you take the superposition over all of them. But in the case, say, if it's one encoded qubit, superposition of both cosets of C2 part. So it's actually superposition over everything in C1. So in the absence of error, we'll just get a random code word from C1. And that will tell us nothing at all about what the original logical code word was. So we started with a superposition over all code words of C1. But if there's errors, then we'll get an error in this code word. And the error is going to be E1 plus E2. So this will have bit flip errors E1, and this one will have bit flip errors E2. But actually, let me make it bit flip errors. So bit flip errors both in the incoming ancilla and that happened in this control knot gate, in the say target of the control knot gate. Okay? And what we use the error correction properties of C1 to deduce what E1 plus E2 are is, or deduce what it is. Okay? So obviously there's some slight problem here. Now if you have errors in the ancilla, you can't distinguish those from errors in the data. But it turns out it's not going to be such a big deal, actually. But let me get back to that in a minute. First, everyone see how this works. Okay? So this is how we correct bit flip errors. And then to correct phase errors, well, what we can do is the same thing, but basically in the Hadamard basis. So now we're going to have the ancilla be a logical zero, and we're going to do a controlled knot from the ancilla to the data. So again, this tells us nothing about the logical data, right? Because this doesn't do anything logically, right? The control is zero, so it's a logical control knot does nothing. But phase errors here will propagate backwards along the C knot, and we'll get phase errors down here. So to find phase errors, we have to do the Hadamard transform and then measure. And that would give us a random code word of C2. And let's say, I don't know, F2 down here and F1 up here. And so the phase error would be F1 plus F2. And we can correct that using C2. Okay? So the Steen error correction procedure is going to consist of doing that and that, or maybe the other way around. Okay? So, so one thing we do have to be careful of is what if these ancillas are wrong? So again, we're going to have to check the ancillas before using them. It's the same thing as before. How do we make these ancillas, first of all? Well, okay, so I just said one way to make them, but that was using an error correction procedure itself. But since these are CSS codes, we have some simpler procedure. We can use a non-fault-tolerant encoder for these ancillas and then check them using basically the same procedure. So to check a zero, for instance, we can C0 it with another zero and then measure. And this checks for bit flip errors in the zero. Okay? And if we do this twice, we'll have two logical zeros, and then we can check them against each other for phase errors. Which we probably want to do like this. So this is like another copy of the Steen error correction, but it's now using ancillas that haven't been checked. And one modification, which is that we're doing it for the code that gives the logical zero rather than the original stabilizer code. Okay? And since this is an ancilla, we can discard it if we see any errors. Okay? Yeah.
Are these protected against stuff happening? I mean, do you have to assume that nothing happens between checking and...
Well, okay, so let's think about it. So what is the thing we really have to worry about? Well, okay, something that would be really bad would be if this were logical zero instead of logical zero plus one. Right? Because then when we do this control knot, we'd be finding out information about the logical data. That would be a problem. Well, for that matter, if this is a logical zero minus one, a logical phase error would kick back into the data. So what we have to worry about most is that these ancillas that create are don't have the right encoded state. Okay? So that's what this checking is supposed to stop, most of all. Or the other problem we have to worry about is that a single error somewhere in the encoding circuit can cause two physical errors further on, or any kind of multiple like that. That there could be more physical errors here than there were bad gates in the circuit that created these things. And in the case of a bad logical error, of what wrong logical state is a special case of that. Yeah?
Do we really find information out about the state? Because we don't know.
Well, we do, because the point is, well, first of all, this is a zero, then we're doing that, right, which is a measurement. And so the point is that with coset, I see what you're saying. The point is that we didn't know that it was a logical zero. Well, that's true, but the environment knows.
Okay,
and so the environment would find that information, which is in some sense even worse, right? Yeah?
Sorry, more what I was asking was, so you're going to take, say, the thing that you drew on the second thing, that...
Sorry, this one.
Sorry, bottom. Top line is now your ancilla.
Yeah, so this is the ancilla that's going to go into here. Or you could do a logical Hadamard and put it in here.
Do you need any protection for that from... You would draw a line, right?
I mean, right.
Do you need protection against something happening on that line then in between?
Well, okay, so obviously there's a possibility of errors happening in that time, but we're not doing anything, right? So it's kind of a transversal nothing gate, which means that any errors that happen, they're just going to be on single qubits.
Okay.
Okay? So they count against our error budget for this big error correction block.
Okay.
And the point is that that errors that occur there can only affect one error, one thing in the ancilla. Okay? But there is something we have to worry about. How do we know? I mean, like in the scene error correction, if there was one bit of the synchron that was wrong, the error could be totally wrong. So if we have one error in the thing here, the ancilla here, and then Megger, then maybe we'll be totally wrong about where the errors are. Right? That seems like it could be a problem. So you might say that we have to repeat this, but it turns out we actually don't. So why is that? Well, okay, so the basic idea is that, well, this is a code word of C1. And the errors in it are actually in exactly the same places as the errors that occurred here. Okay, so actually changing one error over here, say one extra error from the ancilla, well, what it does is it creates one extra error over here in the classical code word. Right, and so we'll actually see an error that corresponds, we'll deduce a bit flip error that corresponds to the union of these two bit flip errors. That's bad in the sense that, well, then when we correct it, we cause an error in the data that was on the ancilla before. But it's good in the sense that one error down here can still only cause one error up here. Okay? And in fact, this error correction procedure satisfies our EC property 1. But was there another question?
Yeah, Daniel, so here in check ancilla, the ancillas which are getting in, they could be anything?
No, I mean, so you use a non-Qualtrics procedure. Yeah, okay, so maybe I can analyze this first before getting to that other thing. So if you use a non-Qualtrics procedure to create these logical zero states. So what I've written here is good if the code corrects one error. If it corrects more than that, you have to do more checking. But you do a non-Qualtrics procedure here, okay, to create these logical zero states. And so that means if there's an error in that encoding, this could be anything. But if there's no error, then it's a logical zero. Okay? So if there's only one error in this whole circuit, then at most one of these four things can be wrong. Right? And then this check procedure will detect any error. Okay? And if one of these gates is wrong, well, these are transversal things. So that can only affect one physical qubit. So that's okay. Okay? So the point is, if you look at this whole thing, and there's only one gate that's wrong anywhere in it, the logical state that comes out is correct, it's a logical zero, if it passes, right? You can discard it and then you have to do it again. But if it passes, it's a logical zero state. If there's only one error in all of this. And there's at most one physical qubit that's wrong, that has an error. Yeah.
So Danny, when you're saying if there's only one error, meaning there's only one error including in the
including in the non-fault tolerant preparation. That's right. That's right. We have to include that.
And in the non-fault tolerant preparation, whatever we are starting with, right?
Well, you're starting with physical preparation, so that you prepare physical zeros.
Yeah.
Right. So somebody, you press a button on your machine, it produces photons or atoms or whatever. In the physical zero state, and then you put them through some physical coding circuit
and that
creates the code.
That is what we assume is all right.
Well, so I mean, so each of those procedures could be wrong, but each of those steps could have an error in it. But that's our one error, right? We're only allowed one error in the whole thing.
No, the one that produces physical zero, you see.
Yeah, so that could have an error. It could produce a physical one instead. But that's your error for the circuit. Okay? Preparations can go bad, just like measurements can go bad, just like gates can go bad. But we're going to count them all at the same level. It's an error.
But it could be doing anything in between, right? I mean, like, maybe not either 0 or 1.
It could be a superposition of 0 and 1, sure. That's also a possible error.
So we think of it as a circuit, or we don't think of it as a circuit? I mean,
the preparation procedure is a circuit, yeah. But it's a circuit that might have an error. So it's a noisy circuit.
So if that's a circuit, what does it start with?
Maybe you think a circuit just as a set of unitary gates. But really, a circuit should be a little more complicated than that. It should consist of state preparation, where you put in inputs, ancilla states, zeros, say, unitary gates, and measurements. Okay, so it's a circuit in that sense. In this particular case, the measurements don't come in until you get to this part. You put in zero ancillas. You have no data coming in from outside, just zero ancillas. Do some unitary gates. And then you get what should be a logical zero if there are no errors.
Yeah, so in that circuit, right, where we're putting in zero answers, mm-hmm. there we have to make some assumption about the correctness of what we're putting.
Well, no, I mean,
is maybe what he's after.
So
if you want to, you would model what you physically do as a perfect encoding plus something that introduces errors.
So for instance, this cat state thing, right? So we have some preparation gate, which is a CP map, right, which takes no input and has a one qubit output, which is a zero.
Oh, which has no input.
Yeah, so that's a valid CP map. And it produces a zero. So that's our kind of our starting gate. We do a bunch of starting gates that create zeros. And if one of those goes wrong, then this could be a one or a zero plus one or anything else. Right? But that's an error for this circuit. If the circuit is only one error, then we've already said it's there. And if these are okay, then these are all zeros, and maybe one of these gates is wrong. So we're treating the things that create the zeros are just at the same level as the rest of the gates.
So the map that takes nothing and produces zero is?
It's a CP map. It is.
It takes nothing. It maps what?
Well, okay, yeah. You can think of it as taking a complex number input, but really, I mean, it really takes nothing because the complex number is a global phase, right? It means nothing.
So it takes a scalar.
Yeah, if you want to think of it that way. Taking a zero-dimensional Hilbert space. Well, okay, it's kind of a one-dimensional. It's zero qubits. Zero qubits. Okay? Anyway, so moving on. So I claim that this Steen error correction is going to satisfy EC property 1. So EC property 2 is kind of easy to see, it, I think, in this context. Oh, there, EC property 2. So why is that? Well, if the input state has not too many errors, and we have not too many errors during the error correction, then, as I said, the new errors occur in the same location. Maybe it's not so good. We can go through it much more easily. Whereas EC property 1 is a little bit surprising. Okay, so so in the case for EC property 2, where we have R errors in the input and S errors that occur somewhere in the circuit. So what can happen with those S errors, right? They could be in the ancillas. They could be in this gate. You know, this is actually a bunch of gates, right? It's N gates. It's transversal C0. Or in this gate, or so on. So if they're in the ancillas, we've already said, well, they correspond to physical errors here. So there's two possibilities. So one, there could be phase errors, say here, that propagate directly into the data. So in that case, an error in this ancilla qubit could propagate into the data and become an error in the data. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is that it'll be in this measurement, and we'll get confused. Well, it'll be in E2, and we have no way to distinguish between E1 and E2. So when we correct this, it'll correct E1, but it'll add E2 as a new error. Okay? But again, it's in the same location as it was in the ancilla. So in particular, Y error, which would do both, is still OK. It's adding both, then it's propagating this Y error to the data. The Z part propagates through here, and the X part propagates through this measurement in our correction procedure. Okay, but they're both in the same qubit. So one error, one physical qubit in here, one physical qubit error here, or in here, causes one physical error up here. OK? So the upshot is that the state that comes out of this gate, well, in the case where there's not too many errors coming in, it's corrected the errors that came in, and it's added new errors based on the errors in the ancilla. And so therefore, it'll satisfy EC property 2. Because errors never added up to something that was big enough to change the logical state. OK? But EC property 1 is a little more surprising. I mean, if there's lots of errors that came in, then it could be that this combination of errors that we see will cause us to deduce a totally different error, right? I mean, this is only E1 plus E2 if the total weight of this is less than the number of errors that C1 can correct. Otherwise, we'll deduce some other error. But we will deduce something, and that's how it works. Okay. So let's think about it this way. So the input code word has, we don't care about its logical state because we're interested in EC property 1. But it has a syndrome that corresponds to some Pauli error. So we'll call that P. And so the syndrome will be S of P. And so, as before, we can get some new error that comes from the ancilla, or from errors in the gates. And new error will be Q, or at least the part that comes into the data. And Q prime will be the part that's measured. So why are these different? Well, first of all, as I said, things can propagate directly into data, like a phase error here would propagate back up to C0. And that doesn't show up in measurement, because it's not in this ancilla. And it's also true that an error in this gate might cause an error, one of these C0 gates might cause an error up here without one down here. So there's a couple of ways that you could have these two things, the error that's added to the data and the error that's in the ancilla that you actually measure, be different. This is not the error that's actually measured, sorry. This is the kind of additional error in the measurement. So the actual measured error well, the pre-existing error is always measured, right? Because it'll always propagate to the data. The actual measured error is basically p times q prime. So this has syndrome. S is p q prime. And the syndrome is additive, which was something we showed way back when. Right, that if you think of this syndrome as a binary vector, that so for instance, if both of these commute with a certain generator, then the thing will commute. If one of them commutes, one of them anti-commutes. So it's the XOR of these two syndromes. Okay. Of course, there's a complication now because, as I said, we might not actually deduce that this came from the error PQ prime, right? Because that might be on too many qubits. Right? Since we had no restriction on P, and we know that Q prime has to act on at most R qubits. And actually, we know more than that. We know that the Q and Q prime together can act on no more than R qubits. Right, because they're occurring in the data. And this is for EC property 1. The error correction step is only R errors. So let me just write that as Q union Q prime is less than or equal to R. OK. So we deduce some error that corresponds to this syndrome. But it might not be actually P times Q prime. So we'll deduce error R, we'll call it another poly error R, with the special case, the fact is that the syndrome of R is equal to, well, to this. Right, but again, it might be a different error. But that's OK, since we don't care about the logical operation. So what does that do to the data? Well, the data has now gotten a new error Q. So it started with P, it got Q, and now it has R on top of it. Okay? And let's calculate the syndrome of this. Well, the syndrome is, again, additive. So it's syndrome of P plus the syndrome of Q plus the syndrome of R. Syndrome of R is syndrome of P plus the syndrome of Q prime. P plus syndrome of Q prime. And you see syndrome of P shows up twice. So in fact, you do correct as far as the syndrome goes, the original error. And the overall syndrome that we end with is the syndrome of Q plus the syndrome of Q prime, which is, of course, equal to the syndrome of QQ prime. And we know that QQ primes can act on at most R qubits. So in particular, this state will pass an R filter, which is EC property 1. Okay? So the point is that this error correction procedure, while it might not actually correct the error P, it corrects basically something with the same syndrome. And so all that's, it'll in the absence of new errors in the error correction procedure, it'll get us back to a code word. And the new errors will just move us away from a code word by whatever on whatever qubit they act on. Okay? Okay. No question. So maybe one question that I was kind of hoping somebody would ask is, what's the point of all this? I mean, gene error correction, when you get right down to it, involves a pretty convoluted ancilla preparation, right? So in some sense, we haven't really made things simpler than short error correction. In short error correction, you had to do lots of measurements, but at least the ancilla preparation was relatively straightforward, because you had to make this cat state. Which here you have to make these big entangled states, and then you still have to check them. Okay? But the advantage is that you've put most of the work into making the ancillas. And that's good, because for one thing, you can discard the ancillas if they're wrong. You can check to see if there are errors on them, and then throw them away and start again if they're wrong. And you can't do that with the data, right? Because if you threw away the data, you have to start all over the beginning of your computation, and maybe you were almost done. So gene error correction has this advantage that what it does is it does a lot of hard work on the data. Sorry, a lot of hard work on the ancilla, and then very quickly interact with the data, right? So you only have to do these two C0s, and then some correction once you've deduced what the error is. And that's a very nice thing to do. Now that we know about fault-tolerant error correction, I can move this up and use this backward. Okay, so we can kind of get an ancilla factor, is what it's sometimes called. So this is something that's becoming increasingly important in fault-tolerant circuitry, is we do a lot of work making ancilla, and then once we've done that, we do something quick to do an operation on the data, in this case, error correction. So it's not just used, this ancilla factor technique is not just used for error correction now, and I'll show you another application here in a second, for gene error correction for another purpose. And then we quickly interact with the data. So again, the point of this is that we're putting most of the work. We're not getting rid of the work, but we're pushing it onto something that's expendable, that if it's wrong, we can throw it away and start over. And furthermore, it's something that we know what state it's supposed to be in. Again, we don't know that of the data, which means that it's easier to check. We can check everything about it rather than just some properties of it. Okay? Okay, so in fact, what we can do is we can use this ancilla factor idea to complete the set of fault-tolerant operations we have. Right, so for, okay, so I didn't tell you how to prepare the steam, the CSS method of preparing logical zeros, but I kind of did, right? Which is, it uses the same thing that you do to check ancillas to create a logical zero. Okay? So that means that for general stabilizer code, and for CSS codes, we have even better procedures. We have Clifford group gates, well, some Clifford group gates. For CSS, for 7-qubit code, we have all Clifford group gates. For other stabilizer codes, not so much. Some we might have one or two, but not every. We have fault-tolerant state preparation for every stabilizer code, and a better one for CSS codes. Fault-tolerant measurement for every stabilizer code, and a much better one for CSS codes. And we have fault-tolerant error correction, again, for every stabilizer code, and a better procedure for CSS codes. But we don't have a universal set of gates. Okay? But to warm up to that, to get the universal set of gates, Let me figure out how to get the rest of the Clifford group gates for an arbitrary stabilizer code. So the idea is to use this ancilla factory technique. And in particular, what we're going to do is we're going to use teleportation. So suppose we have a bell pair. So let's forget about tolerance for the moment. We have a bell state, we have another data here, and let me do a bell measurement here. Right, so teleportation tells us we'll get two classical bits, and based on those, we'll do some poly measurement, poly operation down here, and we'll get out the state psi again. Right? Everyone knows that, yes? In fact, I know you know it because I showed it to you using Clifford group manipulations. But you probably knew it before that anyway. Okay, so that's kind of a pointless thing to do. I mean, it's useful if this EPR pair is shared between Alice and Bob, and this is a way of transmitting the state between Alice and Bob. But if you just built this EPR pair yourself in the lab, and you're doing teleportation, it's kind of pointless, except it's maybe a demonstration that you have a nice little quantum computer. But it hasn't done anything to the state. So now let's do something which has a point to it, but again seems kind of trivial, which is, well, okay, suppose then we do a U, some gate here. Well, then obviously what comes out of the circuit is not psi, but U psi. Okay, but this is still pretty pointless because we could have just done the U directly. But now suppose let's insert in this circuit U and U dagger. So obviously this is the identity. So we haven't changed anything. So we're still getting U psi out here. But now I can redefine things. So I'm going to draw a dotted line here, and this is some special ancilla. And then I'm going to put these things together. And so instead of doing a poly operation condition on these two classical bits, I'm doing U, P, U dagger. So there's the circuit ordering is opposite from the usual operator product ordering, right? So U dagger here is first, and then P, and then U. So the point is that based on these two classical bits, we're doing one of these four operations, U, P, U dagger. Now, if U is in the Clifford group, that's still a poly operation. Okay, so what we have then is we have this procedure. And this state isn't, so this is psi. We get out U psi. This P prime is some modified poly operation. And this ancilla state is now I tensor U applied. No, I've written it that way. Well, let's use this. So this is I tensor U applied to 0, 0, plus 1, 1. Okay, so we have a different ancilla input. We have a different poly operation, different rule to take these classical bits to poly operation. But then in the end, instead of getting out psi, we get U psi. Right? So if we can somehow get this ancilla, and we can do Bell measurement and poly operations, then we can do this. And for an arbitrary stabilizer code, we can do Bell measurement and poly operations fault tolerantly. So given this special ancilla, And since we can do logical poly measurement and logical polys, for an arbitrary stabilizer code, then we can do logical U. So I guess I could say here, this is I tensor U bar. It's a logical U applied to this logical U governor. OK? So given this vector ancilla, we can then do Clifford group gates. OK? Yes? And let me observe, in fact, that this state is itself a stabilizer state. Why is that? Well, the logical U is a Clifford group operation, right? So so this thing is a stabilizer state, certainly. And logical U will change the logical X bar and Z bar to other combinations of those logical polys. Right? So say it's a Hadamard, it'll switch X bar and Z bar. So this has a kind of a logical stabilizer, X bar, and Z bar, Z bar. We get mapped to X bar, Z bar, Z bar, X bar. But those are still polys, right? So the stabilizer of this will be a poly, a set of polys. Yes?
But does this bias C naught, or does it not yet?
It does bias C naught. I haven't. Yeah, so let me just draw it. So the way I drew that, it was just a one-qubit operation, but you could have just as easily done a multiple-qubit operation. So for C naught, you'd have, say you have two input qubits here. So let's think of a non-fault tolerant version of this. And you can just put bars on top of everything. And so we have two EPR pairs with a C naught between them. That's our ancilla. Okay? And then we do two Bell measurements like this. And then based on those, we do some poly operation. And actually, there's a little complication. In this case, the bits from down here, it's not like the bits down here control this one, and this bits from up here control this one. Together, they control both of these. Right? And that's because the C naught conjugates, say, X tensor I to X tensor X. Right, so P prime here is U P U dagger. Okay, so if the rule was written to tell you to put an X up here, you could actually do two X's. And then what you get out is the C naught between these things. Okay? And of course the same thing applies to three or four qubit Clifford group operations. Ever want to do this as a primitive. Yeah?
Doesn't this bias C naught at the cost of two C naughts, which we will have in the Bell measurements?
No. See, but the point is that the Bell measurements. Oh, I just erased it, in fact. I think. Well, the point is the Bell measurements we do using this cat state measurement procedure. Okay? Since it's a measurement, we know how to do that. But we don't necessarily know how to do the logical C naught. In fact, it's non CSS code we don't until we do something like this. Right? So this gives us Clifford group for any stabilizer code. Well, okay, so yes, the point is that this procedure works for any Clifford group operation. C naught is just an example.
No, I know, but do you want to avoid doing the C naught on the left there?
So this is the ancilla that you start with.
This is some other ancilla that you can.
And the point is that this is a stabilizer state. Okay. Right, that's what this last line down here was saying.
Oh.
Okay. And you know it's a stabilizer state because, well, this is a stabilizer state, you do a Clifford group operation. So the state is a stabilizer state. Okay? And then when you encode it in the error corrected code, it remains even again. The encoding circuit is also a Clifford group operation. So you still have a stabilizer state. Okay?
And the fact that it's a stabilizer state allows us to verify it?
That's right. By doing short error correction for its stabilizer. And so you can prepare it in the procedure I said before. Okay? Okay. So in fact, this procedure doesn't just give us the Clifford group for any stabilizer code. It gives us all operations. No, that's not right. It gives us a universal set of operations. So it turns out, I'm not going to prove this, but it turns out that actually the Clifford group plus any unitary gate that's not in the Clifford group gives a universal set of gates in the following sense. So it's not universal in that you can exactly get any unitary, because it can't be, right? There's only a finite set of gates that you're using. So you multiply them together some finite number of times, and you'll still have only a finite number of possible gates, whereas there's an infinite number of unitary gates. But it is true that you can get arbitrarily close to any unitary gate by multiplying these things together. So I'm not going to show that either, even for a specific case. But it's true. And in particular, this specific case, well, there's a couple of specific cases that we're interested in. So, so there's a couple of possibilities. So, for instance, Clifford's plus the pi over 8 gate. Or Clifford's plus the Toffoli gate. Or another example, Clifford's plus the controlled I gate. So controlled, really what it is a controlled R gate. So it's this thing. And as I said, actually, Clifford plus anything. But I don't know how to implement this one. These I can implement. And so this is universal in the sense that if you take any product of any length of these things, you get a dense set. Okay, so you can get arbitrarily close to any unitary by taking an appropriate product. Yeah. Oh, no. So, okay. Two responses to questions. Yes?
Like, would, I don't know, just a Clifford with, that's a different type of measurement, Like not only poly measurement or just some kind of weird measurement. Will it give you a?
Yes. Okay. Well, so it depends. Okay, it depends on what you consider. So as it turns out, it's known that any single qubit measurement would do it. If it's you're talking about a multi-qubit measurement, then I don't know. But probably.
Well, like just for example, you just say Clifford, you can measure in the pi over 8 basis, for example.
Ah, good example. Okay, well, yeah, definitely. And in that, we'll see what we might see. We won't see the exact details, but yes, in fact. So why don't we hold off on explaining the answer to that until we actually see how to do these gates.
Right.
And then it'll be maybe more obvious what the relevance is. Are there other questions on what I've said so far? So another thing that's worth noting, there's this Soloveitchik-Taieb theorem, which says that not only do these products give a dense set, but it converges very rapidly. So that if you want accuracy epsilon for gate, you only need to take, you know, some polynomial in log of epsilon terms in the product. That's actually important for fault tolerance. Maybe I'll say something about it next week. Maybe not. Depends how I feel. But the point is that it's really enough to just think of one of these sets of gates. And with only kind of modest overhead, you can get any other set, universal set of gates. Okay? So how do we implement these? Well, these particular three examples I chose have something in common that makes them work in this teleportation procedure. So what do we need to have this teleportation procedure work? Well, what we needed before was that the unitary gate that we were going to implement was a Clifford group gate. Okay? And then when it was a Clifford group gate, UPU-DAD was a poly gate, and we knew how to do a poly gate. But now we already know how to do Clifford group gates. So it's enough if UPU-Dagger is a Clifford group gate. So we'll have some set which I'll call C3. Which I'm going to define as a set of unitaries such that U P U dagger is a Clifford group gate whenever P is a poly. Okay? And the motivation for this name C3 is you could keep on going. So the polys are C1 and the Cliffords are C2. The things that conjugate polys in C1 into C1. C3 is a set that conjugates C1 into C2. And then you could, in general, define CK as the things that conjugate C1 into CK minus 1.
Is there a sort of definition, like, I don't know, that you would conjugate, this is the Clifford group in, I think I put that part right. So basically, you take, so it would take C3 to itself, and not only working with like the polys, but working with sort of all those higher order groups. I'm trying to insanely not here.
Take C3 to. So okay. So the thing is that this is not a group. So this is a complication.
Oh, okay.
And in fact, it can't be a group because there's only a finite number of Clifford group operations, right? So there's only a finite number of possible images of the polys we could have. And therefore, C3 has to be finite. But we know that C3, you don't know that yet, but you'll know in a second, that C3 contains these universal gate sets. Okay? So products of things in C3, therefore, can get a dense set. And a dense set has to be infinite. So C3 can't be cosine multiplication. So what's in C3? Well, these three gates are examples of things in C3. Obviously not exhaustive list, but those are probably the three most interesting ones. So let's do them one by one. So for instance, this pi over 8 gate is in C3. And what does it do? So it maps, obviously maps Z to Z. Because it's diagonal. And it maps x, it turns out, if you do the math, to this, e to the minus i pi over 4 times the R gate, which is the pi over 4 rotation, times x. Okay? So this is one of those very rare occasions where it's actually important to have this arbitrary phase out front of the Clipper group, because otherwise this wouldn't be in C3. But in this case, it's okay. Okay? And the Toffoli gate is also in C3. So if you work out what it does, for instance, it takes xii to x, so again, this is x on the first qubit, times c0 from 2 to 3. Right? So the Pauli is getting conjugated to a Clifford group. And similarly, x2 gets conjugated to x2 times the c0 from 1 to 3. Oh, do people know what the Toffoli gate is? Toffoli gate is like the AND gate. So it takes A, B, C to A, B, C plus A times B. Okay. X3, well, it's the Toffoli is a controlled knot. So on the third qubit, it commutes with x. So x3 goes to x3. And z1 and z2 commute with it also. But z3 goes to something interesting again. It goes to the controlled z on qubits 1 and 2 times z on the third qubit. And again, this is a Clifford group gate. Okay? And you can work out, if you want, that this controlled r is also in C3. Okay? So anyway, so the point is, so if we do teleportation, with the C3 gates, well, we know how to do Clifford groups. So, if we can get these special Ancilla states, then we can do the logical U. Right? And given that, we have a universal set of gates.
Isn't that a little redundant? Saying like.
Well, so. Okay, so why do you think
so
we've done
what that? I mean is like if you want to do the logical U, you need an initial state that depends on U.
You're absolutely right.
Some kind of suggestion you need to implement U.
So it seems kind of silly, right? All we've done is we've taken U, instead of doing it on the data, we've done it on an ancilla, but we still have to do it somehow. Right? But that's the point of this ancilla factor strategy, is that when we're working on ancilla, we have more options. Again, for two reasons. One, we know what the ancilla is supposed to be. And two, we can test it and throw it away if we don't like it. Okay? So how do we do that? Oh, but before I do this, there are questions on the first part here, the teleportation procedure itself.
So you're recursively using the first teleportation?
Yeah, well, so that's right. So, yes, that's right. It's maybe easier to think about the 7-qubit code, where we just had the Clifford groups transversely anyway, so we didn't even have to work very hard. But for general stabilizer code, we can do that. Okay? Yeah?
How hard is it to get the arbitrary unitary in this procedure?
Well, it depends on the unitary, right? So some unitaries will be very easy to get, some will be more difficult. But again, this is where the solving the tie-up term comes in, which tells you that at worst, to get accuracy epsilon to an arbitrary unitary, you'll have like polygon.
I meant point D, as in using any arbitrary unitary to get it.
Oh, yeah, okay. But not all unitaries will be in C3. So if you want to use a teleportation procedure, you have to do a C3 gate, basically. Or you could do a C3 gate and then using that to a C4 gate, but you know, that's just extra work a lot of times. But it does give you the C4 gates exactly, which the solid might not. So. Other questions? Okay, so how do we get these MCLAs? Well, here's one way. So the strategy here is, well, we know what it is, and we have all these measurement tricks, so let's apply those. So this is not a stabilizer state anymore, because U is in C3. But it is an eigenstate of something relatively simple. So the original state, the EPR pair, was an eigenstate of X bar tensor X bar and Z bar tensor Z bar. And we know that U will conjugate the logical X bar into a logical Clifford. Right? So it's an eigenstate of X bar tensor logical this thing. Okay? So at least for the case of 7-qubit code, where we're doing these things transversally, we have a way to do this. We just have to measure these eigenvalues. And so I have some space over here. Let's do that up here. And we can use our cat state procedure to do that, because that didn't really depend on it being polys that we were measuring. It just had to be transversal. So what we do is we have up here a cat state. And here we have our ancilla. So we prepared this ancilla using a non-fault-tolerant technique. And now we implement the Kranz-Russell Clifford group gate, conditioned on the cat state being in the appropriate state. Hadamard's up here, and measure, and repeat. Right, so we haven't avoided the other problems of this cat state procedure. So we have to, in fact, do error correction between here as well. Okay? So it's just like we're measuring any other logical operation, in fact. Okay? Everyone believe that? Okay. So, but obviously, this is a fairly lousy way to do it because it involves these big cat states and you got to repeat a bunch of times to get the error correct. So, there is a nicer way, So before I do that, let me just observe that this teleportation procedure satisfies these gate properties. So why is that? Well, if we can make ancilla that satisfies these ancilla preparation properties, then everything else in the circuit is transversal, basically. Right? We're doing a transversal. We're doing a belt measurement, which might not be transversal, but at least it's fault tolerant. And so we're putting all these together, and so we get these things out automatically. Okay, so now I can erase this. So another better way, or at least in some ways better, of preparing these ancillas, or I should say of checking these ancillas once you've prepared them non-fault tolerantly, is something called ancilla distillation. So that's going to be kind of like this. Like this way of preparing codes, states in the steam code. Really, we prepared a bunch of ancillas and then we check them against each other. So we're going to do the same thing here, except the checking is going to be a little more complicated because the states are a little more complicated. Or maybe you'll think it's going to be a lot more complicated. We'll see once I've described it. Okay, so how do we do this? Well, it's unfortunately not going to work for arbitrary ancilla states. So these spectral ancillas are called magic states sometimes. Name I don't particularly like, but it seems to have stuck, so. It's only going to work for some, so I'm going to do it with a pi over 8. Oh, and I promised to answer Martin's question, I guess, about what about the pi over 8, measurements in the pi over 8 basis. So it turns out that the actual ancilla that I've described to you here is EPR with a pi over 8 on 1 qubit. But actually, it turns out there's a slightly smaller circuit that works with a 0 plus 1 with a pi over 8 on 1 circuit. And so actually measuring the pi over 8 basis actually allows you just to project onto that state, well, half the time, right, if you have a random state. So that's a very easy way. Given that measurement, you can just prepare this ancilla. And then you can do this without having to go through this other stuff. So that's a sense in which measuring in some other basis is very helpful, because it allows you to prepare these magic states directly. OK, so for the pi over 8 state, here's what we're going to do. So it turns out there's an error-correcting code, quantum error-correcting code, where you can do the pi over 8 transversally. So what is that? So we have this classical code. So it's going to be two classical codes. So it's going to be a CSS code. So we have a 15-qubit CSS code. And the generator matrix of the code C1 is going to be this thing. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And then 8 ones, 7 zeros,
1, 2, 3, 4,
so this is what's called a punctured Reed-Muller code. So if you add these four rows all have weight 8. And this one has weight 15. So to make the full read mode code, you add a 1000 call. Okay. Anyway, so this is punctured read mode code. It has code words of weight 8 and higher, so it actually has distance 8. But the dual code that we're going to consider is that the parity check matrix of C2 is going to be these bottom four rows. And so C2, and C2 is actually Hamming code. And therefore, the quantum code has distance 3. OK, but that's still a quantum error correcting code. That's not so bad. The point is that the code words, the logical zero here, is a superposition over these things. And so these have weight 0 mod 8, right? You can hopefully see that from this thing. That some of these will still have weight 8. And logical 1 is a superposition of the other coset, the L1's vector, plus that. And these things, since this thing has weight 7 mod 8, all of these things will have weight 7 mod 8. So that maybe requires a little more work to go through this, but it does. Okay? And so what that means is that a transversal pi over 8, well, if you apply it to the logical 0, you get a phase e to the I pi over 4 8 times, or 0 times. Right? So you get e to the pi over 4 times 8 is e to the 2 pi, 2 pi I. So you get no phase for the logical 0. For the logical 1, well, it's weight 7 mod 8. So you get a phase e to the 7 I pi over 4. So it's e to the minus I pi over 4. So the transversal pi over 8, so it does no phase to the logical 0. And it does e to the minus I pi over 4 to the logical 1. So the transversal pi over 8 does r minus pi over 8.
This yeah. The definition of the state 1 bar, it's the sum over 1 bar plus v, so you mean...
This is... I didn't know what to write. So this is the all 1's vector.
Yeah, okay.
Okay? So this is a state, a code where you can do the transversal pi over 8. So actually that's not so bad because... Well, okay, so you don't get a universal set of gates, unfortunately, because this is not, if you do the Hadamard, you get out of this code. C1 and C2 are not the same. But I guess this would already give you a universal set of gates, right? Because you could use the teleportation procedure to construct the logical Hadamard. So that's not so bad. But we can also use this to do the ancilla distillation for an arbitrary code. And the way we do that is, can I fit it on this board? Yeah. Use that one. So what do we do? Well, so let's do the following thing. First of all, we create, using some non-fault-tolerant procedure, a whole bunch of pi over 8 ancillas, magic states. Okay? And now, and so what state are we trying to get? We're trying to get, well, it's a pi over 8 ancilla is I tensor U times E PR prime. So what we'd like to do is we'd like to do a fault tolerant U on this EPR pair. So what we can do using our logical Clifford group gates this state encoded in the 15-qubit code. On top of the regular error correcting code.
You mean concatenated?
Yes, I mean concatenated, but I haven't discussed concatenated codes yet, of course. Okay, so does everyone understand what I'm doing? So I take a whole bunch of blocks of my original code, and the encoded state for those will be a code word of this 15-qubit code, in particular a code word of two blocks of 15-qubit code, which themselves encode the 0, 0 plus 1, 1 state. Okay? And then what I do is I use the non-fault tolerant pi over 8 ancillas to perform the physical, to perform pi over 8 gates on this other code, which do the transversal pi over 8 on the 15-qubit code. So maybe it's more helpful if you think about this by forgetting about the underlying code. Right? Everything is encoded using this main code. So let's just forget about it. And we know how to do Clifford group gates. We don't know how to do pi over 8 gates. But we do have these pi over 8 ancillas that we can create. But we can only create them unreliably. Okay? So what are we going to do? Well, using the Clifford group gates, we encode the 15-qubit code, this logical 0, 0 plus 1, 1 state. We use our unreliable pi over 8 ancillas to use teleportation on the physical qubits of this 15-qubit code. And that gives us a transversal pi over 8 gate. And actually gives a transversal minus pi over 8. Okay? But that's not going to be very important. There's a couple of ways around that. First of all, you can convert minus pi over 8 to plus pi over 8 using just an R of pi over 4 gate, which is Clifford group 8. Or you can just alternate between pi over 8 and minus pi over 8. The limitations are the same. Okay, so, and once you've done this, then we have the state I tensor R pi over 8 applied to this EPR pair. But it's still encoded in the 15-qubit code. And what's more, there might be some errors in it, because some of our pi over 8 ancillas were wrong. Okay? But remember, this is an error-correcting code. And we have Clifford group gates available. So we use those Clifford group gates to measure the sync from the 15-qubit code. So we can either correct or detect the errors. So since it does correct one error, we only have to worry about one ancilla being bad. We can correct that. If we have to worry about two ancillas being bad, though, since it's distance 3, we can still detect an error and then throw it out. Correct one error. Detect two errors. And discard the state if we see them. Okay? And so then we have something that really is the state with no errors. And so we decode the 15-qubit code. And we get the magnet state that we wanted. And of course, now we should remember that we're doing this all in this other code. And so this state is still encoded in this other code. Okay? So this is a procedure that, given some unreliable power aids, you can test them against each other to get some more reliable ones. So this procedure works. If you only have to worry about two bad ancillas, you only have to do this once and then throw it out and do it again if there were errors. If you have to worry about more errors, then you might have to do multiple rounds of this. But in principle, you can do that. And actually, convert is very fast, the error rate you'd expect, if the error rate is not too high to begin with, right? At least if you have, frequently, if you have three errors in this, then it's not necessarily going to work. Okay? So I guess I'm taking back a little bit of the time I gave you last week. Okay, so you can come back next time with questions about this. And remember, if you haven't already turned in your problem set, pick up the old one, the solution set, the last one, and the new problem set. Okay. That's